What happened? access to this land. So is that really a certain that they drop out rate, but it's very fluctuating because some learners actually move out of the school system early. There's migration that needs to be taken into account, and then of course some debt. But to have a full discussion on this, the education system must be able to monitor and tell us exactly what is happening with this number. So in the free state, it is at 40%, 86%, which is very well. And then you will get the throughput that tells you about 40% actually passed. And when you look at grade 10, it only didn't pass. And what is even more interesting is when you also look at your bachelor passes, you see that this is only 35% actually passed. So if you look at that number, it tells you that of the few learners that actually go to matric, even lower, look into our qualifying up. So that, I think that is the discussion that needs to happen around education. In terms of the early LTSM numbers, this should not be surprising considering the amount that is available for balancing in other compositions of the budget. So your LTSM only spends about 41% of the budget, which is lower in terms of the previous year by 85%. But this is really because of the pressures in place. So you must remember, you will see in the slide coming, you will see that the accrual of the profit are much higher than the amount that is available under the understand amount. Because ideally, the amount that you understand should be the amount in cash that is available for you. So that
it really means that much.
So ideally, the amount that you understand at the end of the year should almost be equal to the amount in cash that is available, so that whatever you understand, you are able to retain to the national treasury. But if you will check, you will see that the amount available are much lower than the other amount in the cash balance. So that is the main problem that the I know the provincial treasury is struggling to deal with, but they are very much in the process of dealing with that in the department, especially under the section 18. And then this is the health preliminary. There was an overspending on by 17%, mainly because of medicines. With regards to the cash, we struggled to find the correct number because this, if you check free state, is much lower than all the other provinces. But this is when we investigated. This is because of the poverty in the financial system. So, but then what you wanted to highlight is that if you want to get hold of these claims and want to manage them, even when you're recording, there needs to be proper recording of the expenditure. So the reason why is because there are actually a lot of items that where this amount is being recorded. So it is a very active feature. Health compensation. The free state they understand 560 million. But this understanding should not be used as there is savings in the problem. Actually, they also have pressures. But the problem is they struggle to find to retain the specialists. And that is the compensation that they need. So if you look at the personnel numbers, you see there's actually a decline in the number of nurses, medical doctors. You also see a decline in the number of medical doctors. So in the number that should not be viewed as savings, but should be, this is funding that still needs to be used accommodate critical staff, especially under obstetrics. Goods and services, these are a few items that we've selected. Your medical supplies, medicines, laboratory. So you will see the center point are medicines, which is normal because when we do budget adjustment, you find that the adjustment is about 5.5%, but medical medicines actually increased by much more than that. You find that it's around the range of 16 to 20%. So it does create some budget constraints there. Capital expenditure. So it's compared to previous year, the expenditure is so it's lower. But in terms of capital, but this is also as a result of a decision that has been taken by most treasuries, because you find that health departments are spending more on renewable health, but there isn't the budget to operationalize those hospitals. So the best way is to move money away from creating new hospitals and trying to operationalize them and also focus on new things. So I think for most provinces going forward, you will now see the reduction in case count so that they focus more on maintenance and operationalizing the hospitals. Programs on health facilities below the age are called to have most of the teams for control. And then in the industry stage, actually it's not there because about more than 40% of the teams have reached the ideal stage. But obviously we need much more to be done in that. And I think we're supposed to have reached the target by now. So we only have to 40% of the ideal clinic. Conditional grant performance, you'll see on the third column those are the conditional grants that are performing below 90%. So this is a serious concern because you must remember that conditional grants are there to, you know, for a specific reason. So if we are not spending and it means that, you know, we are not providing enough services. And you will see in the free state where they have agricultural conditional grants not performing well, with the content of free state, which that is seen as an agricultural economy. So if there isn't enough, or, I mean, if you're not spending well on our conditional grants, that will not become a problem. On the human settlement grant, I think what needs to be highlighted most, and this happens with most provinces, you will see that the expenditure is very much on par. Mostly they spend 100% of their human settlement grant. But if you can the green one, which is a non-service, it's much up there, 100%, everyone is paying. But when you come and look at now the outcomes are much more. Look at the houses in the free state that have been delivered, 67% compared to 100% of the grant. So there are a lot of discussions there around the way the sector reports, that is really not like financial, because this year in another department, when you have a target this year, then you also link it to the budget this year. But in the human settlement, you find that you have budgeted for a house, but you've only serviced the house, and you are just still supposed to build a house. And this budget and the alignment is not really tough. So it kind of creates confusion when you get the deliverables. But the main reason is that what we are seeing is that the expenditure is not in line with the deliverables. In terms of the fifth stage expenditure, I mean, this summarizes in quarterly what we've been talking about. But the major concern that the source has at the National Treasury is the cash management in the province, which also is linked to the budget pressures. The budget pressure ends up creating cash shortfalls. And this also explains why there was LCSM expenditure shortfall and delays in transfer because there isn't enough cash in the province. They still have cash credit. And we've seen that it's been declining over the years, so it's something that we have covered. Actuals are also a problem, as you can see when you look at the three and D3, instead of declining, they're actually increasing. Education has increased by more than 25%. And health more than 61% this year. So I think that is still a problem to say that instead of seeing a decline, which shows that we are actively reducing upwards, but they are actually increasing. So that's what needs to be addressed. And then the provincial, specific issues. These are the issues I've been talking to throughout the presentation, the budget shortfalls in education, afterwards as well, the cash shortages that are affecting transfers to the expenditure of goods and services, the personnel numbers in health, social development. The main issue there was just the poor spending with the infrastructure, but that has now moved on. And then public works. Public works is struggling with the accrual for municipal accounts. This can't really be pinned down in the province. It's more of an IGR issue, because the municipal rates are determined by municipality outside the budget process. So then when for instance, if the budget increases by 5% in public works, and all the other provinces, and you have municipal rates growing by 20%, that obviously presents pressure for the department. Accruals also in roads and transport, and human settlement issues, those are the issues that I've already spoken about. So in terms of recommendations, we would like you to note the preliminary outcome of provincial government. We would like to note the overall discoverage, the spending for education and health, as well as the high accrual, and then we would like to admit that the capacity enhancement, the captaining and project evaluation skills should be resourced by department to raise the understanding of the certain spending items and condition of the budget.
Two provinces, members, negative cash balances. This is Free State. Northern Cape, if you recall the presentation from Northern Cape. That's why we made specific on the fiscal position. Looking at your cash balance, looking at your own revenue, but what you have still have to pay, that management.
Year-on-year increase in the expenditure for the province. And despite stating that 3.7 billion that I've spoken about, the province, the numerous numbers are showing that the province is actually underspending by 1.6 billion, which then might say in some instances the money that would have been added was not necessarily needed, because then we see that in the projected under expenditure in the state. And then on the education side of things, I mean, if we look at the budget for education in the province, it's about 37% of the total public expenditure. And we actually see, coming from 2018-19, as we know, there is the issues that in health, the life management issues, the bigger cost and all of that. So we see from 2018-19, health budget is actually starting to surpass education. I think in two provinces in the country, with actually the biggest health budget, the health budget being bigger than education, is going to be Gauteng and now and the Western Cape in the whole country. And then in education in particular, you can see that the education expenses is going to increase by 5.1%. And then on the compensation of employee side, like I've already indicated, those new schools that are opening in the current financial year, as they open in the school calendar year, starting in January, that will reduce the pressure in the budget for 2017-18, as they have to then add money to the adjustments. I mean, we see that in terms of the number of educators, compared to 2017, the province has actually added 1,233 new teachers in the 2018 financial year, which has actually increased the headcount in the province. And then zooming on the learner teacher support criteria, which is largely the procurement of textbooks for learners and school stationery, we see that the province year-on-year numbers are actually showing a decline of 3%. But as we know, Gauteng, this is a province, they are procuring textbooks for learners. So they are moving towards building of a paperless classroom. So hence you then justify why the expenditure for financial support material is actually declining as it is. But also understanding that for Section 21 schools, there is money that is then transferred to schools in terms of the nonsense that are transferred for the procurement of LTSM for maintenance of the schools and so forth. And that LTSM side of it becomes part of the transfer to schools and is not covered as part of this LTSM yet, which likely covers Section 20 schools. So a big chunk of the LTSM is also spent under transfer to schools, and also the procurement of chapters is taking some chunk of the money on the side. And of course, I mean, when we look at the metric pass rate, I mean, we can see that Gauteng is the second after Free State, actually. But then when we look at the throughput rates, and Gauteng has been doing well, is the best actually in the country on the throughput rate side of things. Like, if you look at the learners that have started grade 2 from 2007, you will see that those learners through the system, they actually study until they actually complete matric, if you look at the percentage of Gauteng, which is way above actually the national average. And I think that is actually fantastic on the program.
That's best, I have the best practice that we share with other provinces. Yeah. We must actually send other provinces to Gauteng.
So but compared to 2016, we can see that the enrollment numbers on the other side are actually declining. Okay, on the health side of it, if we look at health in particular, they adjusted their budget for 2017-18 by almost 2 billion rands. But then the preliminary numbers are actually showing us that health is underspending by just about 200 billion rands. But then the year-on-year expenditure in health, given the pressures on like these departments, we can see that it's increasing way, way above CPI, whether it's due to the burden of diseases, the pressures that are in there relating to accruals, and so forth, because of the immigration issues that I've already mentioned. So we can see, I mean, the growth in this department is just above 12.1%. But the big issue in health really is the issue of contingent liabilities. Because claims against this department are more than 22 billion rand. It's a very, very big figure. And we can see that in terms of what they've been paying, suspects also, the claims against the states, which for 2016-17, they paid over 751 million. In 2017-18, they paid 358 million. And the big concern that we have, I mean, if these things are not really properly managed, is that these claims against the states are actually eroding funds for critical services, for health, etc. And then that is a very, very, very big issue. And we believe in terms of the management, I know the team is actually establishing a team to look at these issues, how the claims that are there, trying to assess the ones that they will be able to win in court and all that, and in some cases, trying to mediate with the families and so forth. And then and part of it is the life management issue that has already been mentioned, which the payments, I think, must still be made to the affected families. And then on the compensation of employee side, I mean, what we have seen from the 2016-17 financial year, we have seen the Canadian Department of Health appointing more than 2,500 employees without consuming budget.
Sorry,
what is that? They appointed over 2,500 new employees without a budget in 2016-17. And the problem there, I mean, we see even, and they overspent in that year by over 900 million. And the carry-through effect, although they're trying to stabilize the headcount numbers now, we still see that the carry-through effect of that decision that was made in 2017 is actually felt now in 2017, is actually felt now even in the 2017-18 financial year. Hence, you can see that the budget for 2017-18 on COE, they're still projecting to overspend that by 119 million, which is the second effect of that spend that was made in 2017. Although, we then must acknowledge that they're trying to do something about this, the headcount numbers are starting to stabilize. In 2017-18, we have seen the headcount numbers reducing by 1,322. But if you look at those, that reduction in the number is largely student nurses, which means when they come from college, you simply don't absorb them and all that. So that is a big issue there. And then they were also seeing a decline, which is of concern in medical specialists, between 2017 and 2018, a decline of 34, as we know, I mean, in the whole country, there's a shortage of this medical specialists. And then so that young minister also saying if family is not appointing the specialist, he might consider putting them under administration and so forth. And then we see really, really that number going down with a big concern. And also, I mean, looking at the current number, I looked at the main number, you can see that the headcount again are starting to again going down. And 2014, the numbers are declining by 2014 there. But again, the target is the medical students, which I guess when they graduate, they don't need to get absorbed into the system. But then looking at the some of the non-negotiables in health that we have, I mean, starting, all that I need to say here is that the non-negotiable item is actually being adequately budgeted for, except the pressure that we actually see in medical supplies, which is actually used to buy mainly slabs, to bandages, to HIV kits, and all of that. So we think we see a pressure in that line. But then the maintenance side of it, we see that the province is underspending that, which shows that it's adequately budgeted for, and a big chunk of that money is used to buy antiretrovirals, vaccines, contraceptives, and all of that. And then on the laboratory services as well, I mean, there has been a historical story of housing underpaying the National Health Laboratory Services. And I think even Honorable MC Christie, when she was presenting a budget, I mean, she indicated that the province is going to actually enter into a payment agreement with the National Health Laboratory Services to ensure that that historical debt is actually taken care of. But also on the property payment side of it, for the payment of water, electricity and all of that, we see that the province is actually adequately budgeted for that item. And then on the payment of capital assets side, we see that the province is not really doing well. And I think this mainly has also to do with the desirable performance on the side of infrastructure. Because then if you then complete the hospital place, so the allied military equipment, for example, that you want to put in this facility, so you cannot procure, and that as well as that a time in the understanding in this CAPEX item. And then on ideal clinic status, I mean, it's commendable on the side of Gauteng. You see that the province has the most ideal clinics in the country. 85%, I mean, the 85% of that clinics are actually, everybody achieved that ideal clinic status, which is the highest province compared to the rest. And then that is commendable. And then on the conditional grant performance, it's likely two sectors that are not performing or two departments. On the agriculture side, so the poor performance on the CAP and the humanitarian mark. And in terms of the construction of community libraries, there is also underperformance in that area, in the performance of those libraries. Or maybe, I should say about the library side, an assessment should actually be done whether people are still using the libraries and all of that. Because at times, given the technology that is there, people when they want to do this, so they probably don't need to go to this library. And the problem is also in closing some of these libraries. And on the human settlement development grant, I think I will still also talk about a lot of things in this department. Really big concern for us. And we've seen in the 17-18 financial year, 150 million was taken from this department due to anticipated performance and other provinces. And if we try to really compare the spending on the human settlement development grant with the outputs of service delivery in this department, we see that only 47.7% of the delivery targets have been achieved. But then you have an expenditure of 98%. Then you ask yourself, where did the money go? Because there are no outputs, but then the money actually being transferred somewhere. So, and I think it's the issue also that the Auditor General has raised, that large amounts of money that this Department of Human Settlements actually transfers to municipalities and entities remain unspent at the end of the year. Like from our food, it looks at the transfer, it looks as if the money is spent, because then the expenditure is 90%, but that money is still being transferred. It's not being put into the liver, and that is a very, yes, very big concern for
us. And when it is transferred? When in the financial
year? I'm going to show that flat when it is actually transferred, which is quicker than me, if you sort of look at it. Let me jump this one because I'm going to touch on that one in particular. But again, probably not to say much on this side, except to say all the departments in the province, all 15 of them, are reflecting preliminary under expenditure on their budget. Except that there is this overspending on compensation of employees, in particular education and health. And looking at the education non-negotiable in particular, we see that in education, compensation of employees is overspent by more than 900 million. current budget for this item, because the immigration numbers, we know about them. When people go come to Kaukeni, we know they go to Johannesburg, they go to Swan and all of that. So we are able to then process it so that when we budget for the appointment of a builder, we are able to then budget properly for this line item. And then we have seen actually the province creating a couple of issues between November and March in the current financial year and so forth due to the opening of new schools. And then moving to the health side of it, the health non-negotiables, we can see that at times we know that they are using health, accruals and so forth. So, but the department at times when the budget is like, you put this budget as if you then, especially when it comes to the adjustment bureaus, that is if you then paint this picture as if there is a crisis in the department, although they are used there, that we believe should still be properly managed. But if you look at what the opposition to overspend by in December, the opposition to overspend much by more than 2 billion, but the outcome is showing us another expenditure of around 200 billion. But the big issue in this health department, I mean, is really around governance issues. Instability in senior management positions, which creates, I mean, the situation of uncertainty and all of that. Because I think in the last 7 years, this department has had about 5 accounting officers, which creates that instability, I believe, in the department. And this, we believe, is an issue that ought to be processed at the political level. And then the high levels of irregular expenditure gained in this department, simply non-compliance with the CM legislation and all of that, which is around 9 billion. So, but a large part of it is actually historical accruals and so forth. And then I've already spoken about the issue of contingent liabilities, which are eroding the fiscus. Claims against the state, I mean, which is about over 22 billion. Most of the cases that the department must still be defending in court. And then, but of course, the interventions, as we know, that are put in this department to try and actually put the department back to a sustainable path. And then we need to question the strategy that we become part of those interventions, because we also analyze the budget from our own perspective, and we still invite, are waiting for that invite to actually form part of some of the technical committees that are actually intervening in the health department. And I think we see pressures also in legal costs, likely relating to the payment of lawyers to actually try to defend, I mean, the province against these medical lawsuits. And then this is now the story of human settlements. Now we can see where expenditure is happening in March, that decline. We can see every year consistently that March expenditure spike. It's like during the course of the year, in the first 11 months, like nothing happens. All of a sudden, there is this December or March. And then, which is that big line? I mean, if we look at 17-18, over 1.5 billion was actually spent in 1 month. And actually, it's not even spending, because it's just simple transfers to entities and so forth. About 854 million was actually transferred to the housing development agency in that 1 month. And that is a very, very, very big concern for us. This thing, if you look at the graph below that, it then shows that actually the individual in the province is going down in terms of the number of houses, the number of citizens, that is actually dropping. But you can see that the expenditure then goes in the opposite direction. And then that is a very, very, very big concern for us. All that we are saying is that this expenditure that is then reported in 19% is not necessarily linked to service delivery, because there are no houses that are being delivered, except that the money is being transferred. And the housing model, oh, we believe that is something that actually should, the delivery model should actually be reviewed in this instance to decide if it is actually working or not, because if then big sums of money keeps on transferred to this entity, then it is a very, very, very worrisome money is actually not submitted to even the National Treasury removal process. Because when you do the removal process, you do get the amount that the banker spent, and then they must come and apply for that removal, but based on that, you get commitments and so forth. And all that we are saying is that that transfers, it's like we now in the process of even writing letters to provinces to actually to ask, out of that money that was actually transferred, how much of that is actually committed to identifying for projects? Because you can see, I mean, it's not just in Kaukeni, but you can see the sense is definitely sent over a number of years, which actually money is just disappearing. We can't even say where it went to. And in 2015, the human settlement development fund for Kaukeni province was actually cut by another 18 million, and then we for other provinces due to poor spending performance. And we've seen another 50 million being taken in 17-18 financial year. Again, if we show across even departments overall the infrastructure spending, we can again see that spike on the ground there. That says spending then becomes low and all of that, all of a sudden there's a big spike. Which then says there are issues that we must address around infrastructure planning. Because if you then cannot plan properly, it's going to be difficult to you. And at the end of the day, you then transfer money, promise to circumvent the removal process and all that, but that money cannot necessarily be accounted for. It just then, as I already said, that even the UTH has equally reported that large sums of money that are transferred to this entity remain unspent at the end of the financial year. And then looking now at the issue of approval, and we can see in Kaukeni, this approval, they were 7.5 billion in 2016. They went up 9.8 billion, but we are currently at 9.5 billion now. And I should think I need to emphasize the point that I'm going to make earlier. If we look at Kaukeni, for instance, Department of Health, that department is producing to, is underspending by 204 million. But yet they have got 6.8 billion in unpaid invoices. So that money should then come from the issues around cash management and all of that. So, but again, the same thing in health being demand driven. When patients come to hospital, you send them back. So the question you've got unpaid invoices, 6.8 billion, and in the province in total is around 9.5 billion, and health is actually accounting for 71% of the cost. And I think the province is actually trying to address the thing, because they have, I've seen in the 2018 MPF budget that they tabled actually given health 4.8 billion to deal with these accrued liabilities. And then 1.5 billion of that is actually allocated in the 1819 financial year. So in conclusion, we are saying the issue of insufficient management positions in health could be addressed. High litigations against the state as well, the cases are spiraling, and then there needs to be consequent management where people are found to be litigants in this facilities. And then we believe that in education, they can still be better training, so that we don't see that the improvement expenditure in conventional communities. Because we say at times, although people come to Kaukeni, when you get digital numbers, you can spend better in that respect. And then on the transport side, the department has equally has an expenditure of more than 2 billion in particular of one contract, and then there is a plan. So actually there is a lot of interprofessional route bus contracts back to the National Department of Transport. And human settlement, you've already spoken about them, that the transport made are not linked to the city delivery. And we believe the province can actually do better to build capacity in department to plan and deploy infrastructure. And then the issue of inadequate expenditure, which is simple non-compliance with the same process, which can be addressed better. And the province has introduced a open tender initiative to actually deal with these things when they expect some of the tenders to produce only we are recommending that the Secretary of Finance knows the preliminary outcome for the provincial budget in 2018 in the fiscal risks, in particular in education and health, and agrees that there is a need to really build capacity to sort out the underspending, in particular infrastructure and good standards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Honourable members, we're going straight to the Gauteng presentation on the MEC. Welcome again. The good story is our revenue 6.1 billion rand. My province is only dreaming about that, Northern Cape. We won't get there sometime maybe in the future. The budget quite high for our province, looking at the people living in Gauteng. The reality of migration, the accruals that's high, the irregular expenditure that's a bit high, and then cash in hand is 1 billion. On the MEC, may I address the committee? You've got 40 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to all members of the committee, my colleagues from the Free State, as well as all of the officials who are here from different departments and National Treasury. Chairperson, I'm told that for some reason the presentation can't load onto the PowerPoint. I don't know why, but there is a hard copy. My one looks like this. I'm not sure what everybody else's looks like, but if I could request honourable members please to thank you very much. So, colleagues, I think that what we would want to draw your attention to is just slide 3 that talks about the principles that guide the way in which our province budget. The first of all, I think that National Treasury has already alluded to the fact that housing is under very severe pressure because of constant in-migration. There are about 250,000 people who move into our province every month, and this obviously puts an enormous burden on all of the social service delivery departments. So the first thing that we have tried to do throughout this term is to reduce spending on non-core goods and services, and also to take steps to fight fraud and corruption, and I will speak about that towards the end of my presentation. We have worked hard, and you have alluded to this, Chair, to increase own revenue and also to find off-budget financing sources for our infrastructure projects. We have also worked hard to maintain Yes, I will come to that. So I'm just setting out the principles as so that honourable members, when they judge us, must judge us according to our own principles that we have set down. So maintaining spending on quality social services, and I will show you how we have tried to maintain spending, particularly on health and education, despite the pressure. And lastly, spending on infrastructure to give expression to Premier Makura's program of transformation, modernization, and reindustrialization. So the story on revenue, as our colleagues from National Treasury have already indicated, is a good story. In our initial budget, we predicted that we would collect 5.4 billion, which was then adjusted to 5.8 billion, and overall in this the financial year we have managed to collect 6.1 billion as of the end of the 17-18 financial year. The main sources contributing to this is the performance of motor vehicle licenses, interest on short-term investment, and patient fees. And we are pleased to say that we have in the past financial year seen some improvement in the collection of patient fees. This has been an underperforming area for many years, and honourable members would be aware that almost 40% of those who attend our public health facilities are not South African nationals, and we are making more effort to make sure that we do collect basic fees from these patients. casino license was narrowly under-collected, and I suppose that might be because of the economic climate. People might be making different choices in terms of their income. If we can just move on to the issue of aggregate provincial spending, and what honourable members will see is that we did spend 98.6% of our budget, and I think National Treasury has already alluded to the fact we underspent by 1.4%. In the spending, 79% was spent on health, education and social development. This is something almost 80% of the budget, and as I explained, this is something that we've worked very hard to maintain. And you will see, honourable members, that we are dealing with a situation where, from a national perspective, we have a policy of fiscal consolidation. What this means is that the equitable share and even conditional grants are not increasing in the way that they have done in the past. So we are actually maintaining this spending on social spending from our own revenue. And that is why that program that we have to consolidate own revenue is very, very important, because otherwise I think we would be in a worse situation with regard to these social departments. We've also worked hard to try and maintain spending on cost of personnel below 60%. We believe that once the aggregate climbs above 60%, we are going to see a situation where we will not have money for goods and services. And I will talk a little bit about our concerns with regard to health and education in this area. And then 21% of the budget would be on goods and services. If we can then move to the Department of Health, you will see there that we have maintained spending on cost of employees, compensation for employees at the 60% mark. This has been an area, chairperson, where we do have a very serious concern, because as National Treasury alluded, in the 16-17 financial year, this was the year when the life of 30 million crisis hit, and I think it would be correct to say that financial and management control broke down in that department in that year. And we see this absorption of 2,000 people. Half of those people are people who were retrenched from the life of 30 million facilities. They were absorbed by the department. They are not skilled personnel. And this led to enormous pressure on the personnel budget of health. I will talk about the Executive Council intervention in health at the end of the presentation so that you can understand what we are doing about it. So it has been a very big struggle to try and contain spending on personnel, and I will also talk a little bit about our concerns with the way in which those controls are playing out at the moment. Goods and services was 32%, and 5% was under transfers and subsidies. When it comes to education, you will see there that 76% of the budget in education is on compensation of employees, 10% on goods and services, and 10% on transfers. Now, colleagues, for many years in the Department of Education, we have tried to keep the cost of personnel below 75%. I think that has always been the national benchmark, and we are very concerned that it is creeping up over the 75% mark, because once that happens, it's going to put pressure on the goods and services budget, and if it spirals out of control, that obviously will then pose a risk, as we have seen once upon a time in Zimbabwe, for the budget of learning teacher support material. Now, the next slide really shows you, in terms of the overall goods and services budget in the department, what are the main items where we are spending it, and I think National Treasury has already talked about the fact that it's medical supplies, and also learner teacher support material in the main. If we can move on, there's a slide, compensation of employees per department, and this is where honourable members can see that there was 1.5 overspent on the compensation of employees, and this is really the primary factor there is the Department of Education. Health has overspent by 0.5%. So you can see that it is on these two departments where they are essentially very human resource heavy, where the overspending is, and there's also a small overspend on personnel in the Department of Human Settlement. Moving on to spending on conditional grants, what you would see, these are preliminary unaudited figures, and they probably will change a little bit. We're talking about 95.4% spending on conditional grants, and the big offenders here are the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development and the Department of Sports, Recreation, Arts and Culture, and I think that we've already spoken about that a little bit earlier. If we can move on to infrastructure spend, there we will see that the revised allocation for infrastructure was 11.6 billion, of which we spend 97%. And what you will see is that underspending on conditional grants, those are conditional infrastructure grants, and there you will see sports, recreation, arts and culture, and Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, you will see the underspend coming through there. What we can explain to the committee is with the Department of Sport, it really was related to the delay in the appointment of contractors by the Department of Infrastructure Development. I think, Chairperson, that the Department of Infrastructure Development has introduced this IDMS system. We are finding that it is a very good system, because what it is forcing departments to do is to make sure that they don't make a request to build a school or a hospital, but there's no land, there's no planning permission, and all the other related processes are not concluded, and then they blame the DID for starting late. So I think that we are seeing that when it comes to the big departments, there is improvement in DID's performance for health and education. But when it comes to the Department of Sport, it's a very small budget. And I think that I've done a lot of mediation between the Department of Infrastructure and the Department of Sport, and I think sometimes they tend to fall through the cracks. So there were delays in the appointment of contractors there, but this process is now on the go. And I would say to National Treasury, our values are extremely popular. Maybe in your day, libraries have books. These days, libraries have computers. So really, people are doing online research and also study and so on in libraries. And we love our libraries. Please don't interfere with this grant. We're working hard to try and make sure that the Department of Sport does meet its obligations in this regard. With regard to GDOT, most of the understanding there was if we can allocate responsibility, it's on the GDOT side themselves. They have delayed in terms of appointment of professionals. You would understand the department has to have their own professionals, because IDMS requires that departments must do all of the pre-planning work, and there have been delays in that department. Now, let me talk a little bit about the Department of Health and what is the intervention. In June 2017, Premier Makura appointed the Executive Council Committee to work on the financial situation of the Department of Health. I think that we need to say to you, Chairperson, that at that point, health was not only posing a risk to itself, it was posing a risk to the financial stability of the whole province. I chair that committee, and I am joined on that committee by MEC Gwenda Mokopa and also by the MEC of COPPA, who would be working there with us. I think that's a useful addition, because obviously you would understand that some of the health facilities do fall in the domain of local government, and there have been complexities with regard to funding of some of those facilities. Now, colleagues, what we then did was we set up six work streams. The first one obviously was on the whole area of financial management, and really, as I said in the adjustment budget in 2017, we can't have a situation where health is not spending money that it doesn't have. So I think that it has really been a process of trying to understand what has led to the accrual. What we can share with honourable members is that the accruals are not as a result of underfunding of the goods and services budget. The accruals are as a result of overspending on the compensation budget. They know that what happens is the Treasury does not stop payment of salaries, they stop payment of goods and services. And this process over 3 years resulted in the accrual. So it's really been about saying, let's understand the root of the problem, let's deal with the root of the problem. What we have said is that health cannot be absorbing more and more people into auxiliary posts. We need to be making sure that we prioritize specialists. I think that there has been concern in the public domain that there is a total freeze on posts. That is not the case. What we've said is that there has to be a post provisioning committee in the department, and that committee has to be deciding whether or not a post can be advertised. The priority is specialists and doctor posts, and then obviously nurses, and not other things that might have occurred in the past. So you will see the second post is the human resource management post, and that is all about making sure that we don't overspend on human resource management. Health operations management is the next area, and this is all about making sure that hospitals and clinics don't buy masses and masses of consignment stuff, keep it all in the cupboard until it goes out of date, and then buy more. And so this is really all about reducing wastage in consignment stock and making sure that hospitals utilize what they have in the cupboard before they start to buy more. Information management, this is really about trying to make sure that we get a patient record system online. It's the only way that you are ever going to deal with the issue of patient fees. And I have indicated that we're already seeing a bit of an improvement in terms of the collection of hospital fees. Medico-legal is really the big area of concern. And what we have done there is that, in fact, our committee, which the medico-legal based in the Premier's office, we've done a proper inventory of cases, we've done a proper inventory of who is dealing with those cases. We are making sure that either we pay if we feel that we should pay, or we defend, and we defend properly. You will have seen that we passed what we spent on medico-legal litigation in the last financial year, and that's really all about getting the situation under control, because I would say that it was neither under control nor was it, nor in certain instances, I'm not sure what those lawyers were up to. Corporate governance, this was all about making sure that there's proper governance of hospitals and clinics, which in its own right is linked to the question of medico-legal. At the beginning of this financial year, we paid all suppliers who were owed below 10 million rand in health, and that's really about saying that we have to make sure that we're not putting the small guys out of business. We have now systematically, and are still systematically, going through all of the accrued debts and making sure that we negotiate payment plans with all the other suppliers, so that suppliers must know this is how we are going to pay you off. We are expecting that within the next 2 years we would then want to pay off all of the big suppliers and reach a situation where we no longer have accruals. If we can just move to the slide, I think it's slide 29, on off-budget financing. What I just indicated is because we are prioritizing our health and social services generally, it means that we have to look at other places in terms of financing of infrastructure. We have an organization called the Housing Infrastructure Financing Agency. This organization is responsible for developing triple keys, doing feasibility studies and finding revenue streams within these projects so that we can leverage off-budget finances. You will see here that we've got a project pipeline which is worth about 72 billion, and you will see there are different stages of this project pipeline. There's the initiation stage, there's the feasibility stage, market release, procurement stage, and financial and commercial close, and there's a list of all the projects there, which ones are at which stage. I have to say to you that it's been, on some levels, a very tedious journey, Chairperson, because our colleagues in National Treasury, when I was appointed Finance Minister, I was told it's an easy job. Whatever the question is, the answer is no. And my colleagues in National Treasury are even better at it than I am. So it's been extremely difficult to get the TA 1, 2, 3 approvals from National Treasury, but I think we now understand how the game works. We are making progress, and I'm sure going forward there's lots that can be learned from us in terms of triple P's and off-budget financing of infrastructure. In terms of procurement, you would know, Chairperson, we have what we call the Township Economic Revitalization Strategy. Our target is to reach 40% of our goods and services spend for enterprises that are based in the township. If you look on slide 28, and I don't understand how slide 28 can be after slide 29, but anyway. What one would want to show you is that in the last financial year we spent 4.5 billion procuring goods and services from township enterprises. This amounts to 24.2% of our goods and services spend, and you will see there how that is broken up amongst our departments and entities. We are backing with getting information from municipalities. Is one of the things that I have requested Minister Nene, that if we are committed to broad-based black economic empowerment, then we do need to be able to show where is government spending on small enterprises and particularly on township enterprises. And that needs to be a National Treasury requirement because we can't force municipalities to give us that information. Thank you, debt payments. What you would see is that most of our departments, nine of our departments achieved 95 compliance on for 30 day payments, six departments achieved 90 day compliance with 15 day payments. So we are doing quite well here. Obviously health is not doing well, and that is because of the accruals. So it's not that they're not paying the invoices because they don't want to, it's because they don't have the budget to pay them. Infrastructure development is still backing. They really are not doing well on this at all. What I'm very pleased about is the Department of Education. They're paying 85% of their invoices within 30 days. This is a very big department, and obviously it's very, very important that they should be achieving those kinds of levels. If we can move, Chairperson, to the open tender process, this is the major intervention that we have made to try and deal with the issue of irregular expenditure and to make sure that we have full compliance with supply chain management. Basically, the distinctive features of the open tender process are that we appoint probity auditors to make sure that all of the supply chain regulations are complied with. We publish all tender information at each stage of the procurement process, and most importantly, the, the bid adjudication committee of later when we make the decision on the tender is open to the public, and obviously all the competing bidders can put in and listen to the whole process. So 60% of new procurement went to the open tender process. 17-18 the target was 80%, although we only achieved 66%, and this year all tenders over the value of 2 million will be going through the open tender process. Let me just tell you about last year, because last year was the year in which we were trying to achieve 80%, so the target was to have 20.5 million going through. We processed 66% through the process. We cancelled 26 projects, and the reason we cancelled 26 projects was we picked up irregularities in the probity audit. And I think that this is what this process is all about, because the early detection of this meant that we avoided what would have been irregular expenditure of 1.2 billion. We like this process. We believe that it shouldn't die at the end of this term of government, and we are planning to put a bill before the legislature. We've already published the draft bill for public comment. We've got pre-certification of the bill, and then you can see there's the process. The intention is to submit the bill to the legislature in August this year. I'm going to pause there. I'm sure there are questions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
MEC, I want to commend you for this presentation, especially your action plan in the Department of Health. We're also fortunate to have Mr. Michael Sachs as part of your team in the province. He was previously with the National Treasury. What is crucial, members? A is leadership. Secondly, a hands-on approach. Why? To restore public confidence. Free State, you acting MEC, I know you've got another hat on today, you're the education man, and you celebrate your outcome of the grade 12 exams 2017. Congratulations also from this committee, and let us all strive to do better. On the members, you've got the presentation. This one. I'm going to give you also 40 minutes of the MEC. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. For the purpose of the committee colleagues, I must say that thank you very much for the compliment of the last year's results. You know, one thing that I always say is that it's good for the small rural province to set the national agenda. And when the national strategy comes and say, now we must move away from the result, let's look at through for the day. I become very happy because now we're setting a new agenda. Don't just look at the results, look at other things that one understands. But Chairperson, we need to understand the conditions under which our province is operating. We're a small province. In fact, the second smallest province after Northern Cape in terms of the economy. So you will see that the kind of things that we've been trying to do in the province have been, you know, try to stimulate our own economy. Because we want a situation where Gauteng cannot complain about inner migration. Because, you know, the questions that Gauteng, the National Center was talking about, that the dropout rate and so on, it's also many learners who leave the province in the Free State going to Gauteng because people fall opportunities.
We've got the same issue in the Northern Cape.
Exactly. So I think a select committee of NCOP should also look at what are the things that we must do to inject economy so that South Africa develops quicker. Otherwise, we'll always have a situation where One province gets the burden of the whole country because of the lack of action on our part. Just to demonstrate last year that the provincial economy in the province of the Free State declined again by 0.2% in 2017. So what will happen? People will move out of the province out of migration. You have a high unemployment rate in the Free State, around 2.8%. And you know that our economy was anchored by mining and agriculture. And the two sectors themselves have been declining with mechanization, with advancement in technology. And therefore, these are some of the things that actually causes even our total budget that we get from national sector to decline. But the services that we have to provide in terms of the constitution remain the same. You know, you have to provide health, you have to provide education, and those are mandatory in terms the constitution. And that is why you, as Gauteng was also saying, that the biggest department that fills the pinch then becomes your education and health. And on the advantage side, these are also two departments that are supposed to, or that are priorities in terms of national development plan. So if you look at the, I don't want to talk a lot about the Department of Education because I'm acting MEC, finance center. So, but if you look at education in the province of the Free State, our budget, Gauteng is very good because you are at 76% in terms of the condition of employment, COE. We are already at 90%. So, if you have a situation where this wage settlement, for example, and I don't understand what the Chancellor never spoke about, the issue of wage settlement, you know, what has been causing problems in various provinces, especially small provinces, has been this external factor. Wage negotiations happen outside the province. And when when you prepare a budget, National Chair will say, we're on 5%. When the wage settlement sets in, it's at 7.5%. And then they will say, you must then absorb that increase as a problem. And this on a continuous basis is actually, you know, reducing the budget of provinces. And this is one thing that I think the committee should be able to take up. I now want to give the HOD for Treasury to do the very details, but I thought that it is important to raise some of these issues. For example, in the province, the biggest numbers in terms of personnel, education and health. As I gave you the percentage of spending, the whole provincial spending is 99.6% of last year's budget. Right? So we have done very well in terms of spending. We are going to apply for all over of 189 million. But you must also see, Chairperson, that in the committee, that when you are executive, you can't sit there and look at the problem and do nothing about it. And one of the biggest problems that we have, as I said earlier, was the issue of economy. And you will see that we are among few provinces that took a decision, you know, to increase the number of patterns. Because it was very frustrating. I don't know whether there are people in the Free State in the committee is moved out. But it's very frustrating to go to community meeting and you encounter a lot of young people who say, we've got Mexico. But, you know, our lives have ended because we're from poor families. And we took a conscious decision in 2009. I remember that year because our battery numbers were only about 100 in the province. And we took a decision, and within a year or two, we took it to 2,000. Right? As I'm talking to you now, we've got more than 1,100 students that are studying internationally. And we were incentivized, because I was part of that process, by the batteries that we also got from Turkey, from you know, Russia and so on and so on and so on. And these are the things, these are the difficult decisions that we have to take in saying that at one point you must address the constitutional issue. If you look at the province and in the country, we have about 7,000 students who are about to fall. So one of the biggest contributors in the distortion of the budget of the Free State has been the conscious decision that we have taken as an executive council in terms of investing for the future. And I'm very, very happy, Chairperson, to tell you that we are beginning to see the results. Children from Germany who have been master's program graduated, children from China, some of them who have been master's program graduated. Just 2 weeks ago, we were actually intending to see some of these children who are studying mechatronics, engineering, and so on, graduating. And therefore, some of the weaknesses that we see now will actually be compensated as time goes on, because we also sometimes, unfortunately, have to take decisions today that will also bear fruit in the next few years. And I think that's the decision that they're taking as a province of the Free State. But I'm going to ask Chairperson that we allow the Chairperson, the CEO of Treasury, just to give us a synopsis in terms of the report that we've prepared for the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, MEC, for your input. You are investing in the future when you invest in the youth. If you look at what Madiba taught us, we can go back and read these sayings. Yes, thank you. Actually, you can carry on. We receive the figures from the Treasury. You can speak to that. Come to your issues, like in the case of Gauteng, they address the health issue. What are you doing in the Free State and doing differently? Looking at your just over 1 billion rand that you have in own revenue, but you have the other challenges as well as irregular expenditure, your unauthorized expenditure is 347 million, cash, negative balance, and those matters. Other members, we have to close at 11:45. I've just received a note, it's a council, it's 3 o'clock flight, they'll overcome. So we have to close at 11:45. We've got no choice.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and Mrs. President, honourable members of the committee. Where the Honourable MEC has left. Chairperson, the overall improvement of irregular expenditure and irregular expenditure in the province year on year, that's what we have realized by year end, and we have exceeded our revenue intent. We had set ourselves a target of 1.1 billion.
Let's please focus on the presentation. I know you've got a problem now with your flight, but let's focus.
Those were the last 2 minutes on the screen. Chairperson, the...
Page 4.
Now moving to slide 5. Slide 5 talks to our reports to the recommendations of the committee. That were made on the report. I will not talk to the recommendations themselves, Chairperson. I'll only talk to what we have done to address those recommendations. I would like to confirm that the Free State Provincial Treasury already have oversight over entities, and that we have rationalized our entities. Previously, we had 5 entities in the province. We have personalized, now we've got 2. I won't make mention of the names in the interest of time. And we're working closely with the Department of Health to maximize revenue collection, especially from the patient fees. We've heard that something is doing well now on patient fees. There are still challenges in our province. though we have worked with the department to at least establish a working relationship and streamline processes with both accident funds as well as Lesotho government for the outstanding patient fees. Lesotho brings their patients to our province and we pay, and in most cases it takes time for them to pay us back. We've got our revenue enhancement strategy in the province, and we fund the revenue enhancement programs, and in this case we have funded the case management program within the Department of Health to ensure that we collect. And we have also a CFO forum on integrated IT systems to enhance processes and revenue. The province has institutionalized chairperson in the supply chain management forum, where the provincial treasury sits practitioners to make sure that we strengthen their capacity and ensure that there is compliance to procurement processes in the province. And we have also established a relationship with CIDB to ensure compliance, especially on infrastructure development departments. And we have institutionalized IDMS within the province chairperson. We have received as a provincial department of treasury an amount of 6.4 million towards co-funding on infrastructure development. And chairperson, I believe you are aware that we had interventions in both education and health in our province, and we have already terminated our intervention within the Department of Health, and the positive outcomes there are that the Department of Health in the province is one of the only four unqualified departments in the country, and we have built capacity also within the infrastructure development unit. The department has actually received now incentive grants for a period of 2 years because of the performance. And cash management has improved within the Department of Health. They have actually closed their financial year with a positive balance. And we also realized the regular expenditure reduction from 300 million in 2016-17 to 20.9 million in 2017-18. And the Department of Education chairperson is still under administration. The intention is to move out of the Department of Education before the end of this quarter. And we have also realized a slight decline in the regular expenditure within the department, and we're working closely with the department. We are also supporting the Department of Human Settlements to make sure that we investigate cases of irregular expenditure and condone those that need to be condoned when consequence management needs to take place. We also support the department in making sure that they realize that. I must also mention that for the first time our Department of Education, as well due to the capacitation within the infrastructure unit, have received an incentive grant of 113 million. 133 million. Next slide. Thank you. Chairperson, the socio-economic profile of the province, I will not go into detail. We just want to provide you with an overview of the structure of our economy as a province. And if you look at the South African economy, how it is structured, chairperson, with the key industries there, the finance, government, trade, manufacturing, transport, and mining, and other, we are actually mirroring what is happening in the country. And like MEC Makwa has indicated previously, mining used to be very strong in our province, but as you can see, it now features only in Northwest, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo, and Northern Cape. And this has also an effect on the level of economic activity. to the country patterns on if you are to combine the industries into sectors, you would notice that the country has got a character of tertiary sector dominating, and if you look at the Free State, second from the bottom, as we are actually second from the bottom also in terms of economic activity and contribution towards the GDP. We also are into tertiary sector, and we are not doing that well when it comes to the primary and the secondary sectors. Now, slide 11, Chairperson, summarizes the salient social economic features of the Free State province. As mentioned, we are the second smallest population, mainly due to low fertility rates and out-migration. We are the fifth lowest economic rate, the second smallest economy, underlined by the lesser growth performance overall and the largely undiversified economy with high reliance on government sector. We are also, Chairperson, experiencing high unemployment rates. In the Zimbabwe, as mentioned, we are at 32.8%, and in fact, 61% of the unemployed are youth, of this 32% in the province. And the strategies or our efforts, Chairperson, are mainly focusing on reversing the out-migration to use our strength. The reception of the province to accelerate the growth through transformation by implementing the SIP projects, strengthening linkages between general government spending and the provincial economy, strengthening and capacitating municipalities to enhance their own local economic development, and we are also focusing on gender mainstreaming. We actually have a project that is funded through the National Treasury of the gender-based budget. We also, Chairperson, focus on enhancing job creation and employability of our labor force through our labor incentive programs, education, training, and skills development, as MDC Maho has elaborated on post-school initiatives in the province, and also focusing on the quality of life issues. Chairperson, we were requested to also talk to the Free State Provincial Growth and Development Strategy. I must mention on slide 13 there, the slide 13 just indicates that our Free State Growth and Development Strategy is defined and supported by the six pillars. I will not read through the pillars, Chairperson, and slide 14. These pillars are six pillars. Each one of them has its own drivers. We've got 15 drivers towards the pillars of our economic growth and development strategy. And some of the projects or initiatives within the province to support our provincial growth and development strategy, the agri-parks. We envisage to have agri-parks in each and every district in the province, and we have some of the planned projects of mining coal in the Sasolburg area with a view to convert to petrochemicals, and there's also a discovery of coal deposits within the belt of TLS and Henneman, Chairperson there, and the industrial parks in Botabelo, East End in Bloemfontein, Industria, Hamilton, and the Maludiabofu SEZ. Those are some of the initiatives there. And our SEZ, Chairperson, has already attracted foreign direct investment. We have a relationship with the Central University of Technology on the Center for Rapid Prototyping and Manufacturing. And we are basically facilitating some investments within Warden. There is a potential investment of 120 million there. We're just struggling to get the electricity supply and the bulk electricity supply for the project to get off the ground. The Harit Fish Hatchery that was initiated by the Free State Provincial Government, as well as the Chinese chairperson, is operational right now. The upgrading of strategic routes within the province, the Ventersberg connection point towards northwest, and the N8 between Mutabelo and Tabantu. And we have also completed a feasibility study for the Harrison Logistic Hub. The N8 corridor project, which is being implemented by the Manaung Metro, is also underway, and already there is an investment there of a new private hospital that is also operational. As mentioned, Marikia Fofu SEZ, and it has got a pipeline investment pipeline of about 2.6 billion. I should skip some of the page. Chairperson, I will not go through all the listed projects, slides 16 and 17, in the interest of your time so that we can get to the financial issues. I just mentioned, Chairperson, on slide 18 that we have conducted some researches within the provincial treasury, 19 of them, and 2 of them were outsourced. And the focus areas are outlined on the right-hand side of that slide. If members would be interested to go through that. And we also held a treasury research colloquium where we invited a number of stakeholders, and 32 research papers were presented, and 4 out of those were focusing on the growth and development strategy of the Free State, and 10 were presented by PhDs and master's students. Chairperson, I would skip slide 20 and move over to slide 22, where we're talking to the revenue collection of the impact of the province. Chairperson, as mentioned, we have exceeded our target with 11.8 million, and still the goose that lays the golden egg for us remains the Department of Police, Roads and Transport through their collection of motor vehicle licenses. And the Department of Health is still struggling a bit with the patient fees, though it must be taken note of the fact that whilst we have under-collected by 32 million, there was 30 million that was paid in just the beginning of this financial year. We paid in by the end of the financial year, we could have been 41%, 41 billion at least, positive on revenue collection. And if you look at slide 23, Chairperson, that is just the economic classification indicating areas where we've been awarded the motor vehicle licenses. And I should also mention, Chairperson, that Provincial Treasury also managed to raise about 16 million for the province because of the investments that we did. And slide 24, just demonstration of how we have been performing over the years on revenue. If you look at how we performed in 2014 through 2017, we have been underperforming for the past 3 years, but in 2017 we managed to exceed our target. And though we had poor performance, but we were in the region of between 95 and 97% for the past 3 years. And I'll skip the challenges of the revenue, and the interventions on slide 26. We have established the relationship with Road Accident Fund, as mentioned, working with the government of Lesotho and the Department of Health. And we have also a task team working on rental properties revenue in the province, working with public works. And we review annually the tariffs in assisting departments to enhance their own revenue. And those are some of the key initiatives. Slide 28, Chairperson, our commercial expenditure. As mentioned by MEC Makwaya, Chairperson, we have spent 99.6% of our total budget of 3.1 billion. However, there are those areas where we still overspending, that is, if you look at economic classification. Compensation of employees remains a problem. We have actually spent 20.1 billion and exceeded our budget with 0.9%. And this is mainly as a result of the Department of Education, the Department of Health, and the Department of Police, Roads and Transport. The reasons have already been provided, and mainly it's because of our fiscal consolidation, the budget cut that we have, and the wage bill and negotiations outcomes that normally are higher than anticipated. The goods and services budgets, as well, Chairperson, our LTSM, our municipal services, property rates and taxes, the National Health Laboratory Services, Medicine and EMS are challenges within the Department of Education and the Department of Health. And then looking at CAPEX, Chairperson, we have spent 91.4% there, and on transfers, we have seen some of the departments underspending there, with the exception of health that overspent 8.1, the steel overspent by 1.4, and police roads and transport by 1.4%. And slide 29, Chairperson, is a reflection of our departmental spending there. The Department of Education and the Department of Health are in the red. The main contributing factors there on those social departments, it's the compensation of employees. And you would notice that, in fact, these three departments alone have got a budget of, or carries 69.6% of our provincial budget. And one of the departments that is spending or overspending on COE, as well as transportation of learners, it's the Department of Police, Roads and Transport. I want to go back to COE, slide 30. Those are the listed departments that have overspent on COE. Slide 31 is goods and services. Mainly Department of Health, on Medicine, NHLS, and EMS. Transfers to subsidies, medical legal claims are a challenge for us within the Department of Health, hence the over expenditure there. And the first aid department of this year has also transferred more than budgeted for entities. One of our entities there, and tourism was struggling, and they had to assist them with about 7 million there. And the Department of Police, Roads and Transport had to deal with the legacy cases of 23 roads, and they therefore overspent them 3.6 million. On conditional grants, Chairperson, the Department of Agriculture had spent 87.3%. of the budget, and the underspending is just a result of more vulnerable projects within CASP, and we have requested a rollover there. The education department, we are struggling with the learners with profound intellectual disabilities grant, where we have performed or spent over 26% of the grant. This is a new grant, and from our observation, the department's state of readiness chairperson contributed towards this low expenditure on learners with profound intellectual disability grant. And the math and science technology grant, also chairperson underspent there. It was as a result of the cash flow situation. The Department of Health, on health facility revitalization, we are limiting our expenditure now on building new infrastructure and focusing more on maintenance. And the Department of Sport, Art, Culture and Recreation, chairperson will notice also that it has performed slightly poorly at 71%. This was as a result of the National Training Center that was supposed to be built in Bloemfontein, and at some point there was a decision, national decision, that they are moving it out of Bloemfontein now to Gauteng. The sector is busy interacting on actually where should the national training center be, and at this point in time we're sitting on the funds as a province, but we cannot make any progress on that project. And looking into the Department of Health chairperson, you would notice that four of the eight programs there are in the red, with administration as a result of medical legal claims. The district health services, mainly because of medicine. The emergency medical services also is a bit of a challenge for us there. And compensation, as much as there is slight improvement there, but we are still overspending. The next slide that we'll focus on in chairperson is slide 37 on the Department of Education. The Department of Education has got seven programs, and there's only one program that is overspending, which is public ordinary school education, and that's where teaching and learning takes place. That's where we have teachers, compensation of employees, and that is the effect thereof. And on goods and services, chairperson, you notice that the department has actually underspent, but it's not because we did not pay service providers because of delays, but it's because there wasn't actually cash. We had to make provision for payment of salaries. The department is quite concerned, really, and there's a need for injection, especially that the number of learners are not stable nor reducing, but are increasing. And we are unable at this stage to increase the number of teachers within the Department of Education. On infrastructure expenditures, like the 9 chairperson, you will notice social development there has spent only 26%. This is as a result of the substance abuse and treatment center, where one service provider did not perform, and we had to request a rollover there. The cash balances of the departments in the province, chairperson, if you compare 2017 March and 2018 March, you will notice that in 2017 we had two departments that were in the red at the end of the financial year. In 2018, it's only the Department of Education. However, the amount is increasing, and this is mainly as a result of the pressures that we find in the department as a result of COE that is growing. And on unauthorized expenditures, like 42 chairperson, as much as this is an unwanted expenditure, we have incurred 347 million of unauthorized expenditure in the province in three departments, Department of Health, Education, as well as Department of Roads and Transport. But if you look at the trends, Chairperson, from 2014, we moved from 596 to 347 of unauthorized expenditure. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Chairperson, we have built trends there from 2011 to 2017. And if you look at it, we started with 5.4 million of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We are sitting at 2.6 million, which is a slight improvement, but yes, this is also unwanted expenditure. Now, if you drill deep into 2017-18, what could have happened there, the Department of Police, Roads and Transport had to settle one case for the 33 roads, and the Department of Health was as a result of outstanding payments interest. And we believe, Chairperson, that we are focusing a lot on this focus and useful expenditure, and we believe that in this financial year we would perform much better. Irregular expenditure, Chairperson, trends from 2011 to 2017, a reduction of 61%. We are at 110 million from 2.1 billion. And the biggest contributors there are Department of Education as well as the Department of Police, Roads and Transport. The accruals and payables, Chairperson, there is no improvement there. If you look at it from 2015, we're at 1.9 combined, the accruals and payables. We are now on 2.3 billion, which is not a good indication, Chairperson. The main contributor there is public works and infrastructure, and it's as a result, Chairperson, of the challenges that we have with property and taxes that are increasing. Our own metro in the province in 2013, when they went through the evaluation law, they revenued the properties of government, and as a result of that evaluation law, the property and taxes increased by 188%. Now, it becomes difficult for us, the burden, once of burden of 100 million. And that's not actually, each and every year, we have to deal with that. And then all the other municipalities as well, their property rates and taxes are increasing at a much higher rate than the rate at which our budget is growing. So it's a real serious challenge that we are confronted with there. The next one, the audit outcomes of the provincial departments, Chairperson. In 2016-17, we only had the provincial legislature as well as the provincial treasury obtaining clean audits. We, however, had five departments that were unqualified. Department of Health being a new entrant, as you can see, it has had a record of qualifications, but now it has moved to unqualified, and we are confident that our Department of Education will also be unqualified through this audit, the current audit that is taking place. The departments that have actually challenges or requests, the Department of Agriculture, there are challenges there of classification between goods and services and transfers. We have since resolved on this with Mr. Treasury moving forward. And the Department of Sports had similar challenges as well as this year. The Department of Human Settlements was as a result of huge regular expenditure which we are working on to clear Chairperson. The recommendations from the presentation is for the committee to take note of the socio-economic review and outlook of the province, to note that the province has spent 99.6% of its budget year-end, pre-audited figures, that the province spent 20.1 billion or 100.9% on compensation of employees. That is an indication that we've got serious pressure, and with the new coming or the recent wage bill agreement, there will be even much more pressure on our fiscal envelope as a province. And we are spending 96.6% on the grants, Chairperson. The province had exceeded its target on revenue. There is a negative cash position in the province. We closed Department of Education a negative balance of 700 million. And we also recommend that the committee should take note of the progress made in realizing our provincial growth and development strategy. And that concludes our presentation.
Thank you. MEC and HB for your presentation, very detailed. Honourable members, I'm going to have 10 minutes for questions and 30 minutes for reply. It's very clear that what the effect is of fiscal consolidation on these big departments in every province, namely health and education. We must bear that in mind. Honourable members, questions? Honourable Shafaku. Honourable Shafaku is standing in for Honourable Makashupi, who is present this morning at the inauguration of the new Premier of the Northwest, Professor Mohoro. Honourable Shafaku is also the Chair of the Select Committee dealing with agriculture. And I'm very concerned about the under expenditure in agriculture. We noted Honourable Shafaku. Anyone else? Blanche, and then Honourable Nzimani. In that order?
Father, thank you very much, Honourable Chair. And also, welcome the presentation. Dealing with a very, very important sector, the dealing with money. Money plays an important role in determining the future of any given country. Chair, indeed, we are dealing with this important money under time constraint. The 50 questions that I had, I think I have turned them into three inputs. One should also congratulate the state, particularly on the education. But given the input by Treasury, that if you look at the progression from grade 1 to 12, there will be a gap for those that are missing. Perhaps there should be a percentage that you would say from grade 1 to 12, this percentage is missing due to migrations to the greener pasture elsewhere. And it is also scary to hear from Housing that 250,000 people are migrating on a monthly. If I had we look at the rate at which we are seeing the mushrooming of the informal settlement, to what extent are they negatively impacting on this budget? There is a shrinking has the state on a year, basis due to some external forces and some other domestic forces in our economy. Okay. We had a severe climate change, severe droughts. And you know that when you are having trouble with your family, those will be leading to Johannesburg. Where is Johannesburg leading is to accommodate this emerging commercial informal settlement. As I've indicated that indeed there's time constraint, but one should also put some disappointment here. As your chair has said, that I'm the chair also of land and mineral resources. Where there is the understanding of the cusp of the human demand, we should be helping the province, because that is meant for the poor of the poor to better their lives. But the understanding of that is also indeed worrisome. But I'm doing this concurrently, not without being specific to whichever department of the province. But also the understanding with redirecting of the proceeds, it should be, there should be a cooperation between the treasury and the provincial treasury, so that it will be easier to trace as to the intended initial funds. Where was it redirected? There is understanding. Giving an example is very personal. To say, you've been allocated 100 million, but you underspend, meaning you have utilized 500 or 50. Can you be able to say that outstanding is this much, or it has been spent on 1, 2, 3. That can also assist the treasury to trace that. So when we do our oversight, of course, as the committee, we are already from Free State, and we are going to make a follow-up. We know very well that the Tabanchu areas, those are areas that were previously under the holdings. When then some of the clinics, because of the infrastructure during rain season, cannot be approached, people will be trapped from the other side when it was raining. I hope when we go there to visit, we'll see some other changes. And we'll be leaving to Gauteng, if I'm correct. Sometime
we're doing it in the
So I said I'm just making a comment, but I don't want to consume a lot of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Schwab, Honorable Brown, and Honorable Schmeier.
Yes, sir, thank you. I'm also going to start with the criticize the state for the big items.
You speak into the mic.
We have, you know, we visited, as my colleague said, we have been in the Free State, and I'm just going to touch on a few issues. Chairperson, my first question is, they, in education, I believe, there was overspending on compensation, and yet the numbers have declined. That is, you know, my mathematics stated it needs to be the other way around. Anyway, that needs to be clarified. Chairperson, then, as far as health is concerned, there is a problem in terms of goods and services underspent, and apparently there is still a shortage of medicine. But while we were there, you know, we demonstrate that quite often medicines are being returned again because then it's outdated or whatever the position is about something of that case. Capital works is always a problem everywhere. And
we expect better and better plans when Then, Chairperson, the Gauteng, when they came here and presented on the human settlement grants, they raised that their challenge on the embassy is here now. They raised that the challenge, their key challenge amongst many, as being the misalignment of budgets with the corporate department, with the local government, or the municipality, and that caused them not to implement or not to build houses and all kinds of issues of land and special issues. And obviously the same thing of no professionals there, literally no management of the department in terms of your technical skills and capacity level. Why I'm raising that point, because the MEC has indicated that she might want to make a comment on that, because she says she was applauding the IDMS, and therefore there is a bit of a disjuncture for me. If then a department came in and couldn't plan in terms of how we assessed and observed, that the department was never planned, yes, there were no professionals, but I mean, if you still have issues of IGR, that's management. And I take a look as well, Chair, of what the initiative that the MEC has shared with us here today, which is the council or the committee that has been formed, that was formed by the Premier, and I hope it will look into these issues of misalignments that were indicated to us as have caused poor performance or underperformance in that grant, the human settlement grant. And then, Chair, because the MEC is here, she's in the budget council as well, the EDC, that issue of the new grants, I think, probably there is, these grants are introduced and discussed there, and things like that. You might want to hear, her comment comes back to that.
Can I just get clarity, which grants is the honourable member referring to?
The new grants that are underperforming, including your learners with profound disabilities. Generally, when the new grant is being introduced, and the briefings that are made, it's not a surprise. It's not just the minister goes in and announces a new grant. Right. So, generally speaking, those who sit in the budget council, in those forums, are aware of what this grant is going to be dealing with and what is its intention and purpose. All right, and then the Free State Chair, I think we must note progress on I think those slides indicated nicely on the unwanted expenditure slides, indicated the some improvements, and we must note those on their trends on some of the expenditure where they are cutting down a number of with the downward trends in terms of the unwanted expenditure, so that we should at least positively note that. And then, but then, when we went to Free State, we were on the irregular mm-hmm. expenditure. The calculated 2.1 figure. The culprit being public works. And then they are saying changes because of the property rate as a reason. What are they doing with that? And also, what is the issue with the property rate? Are the municipalities not rating, or are they, so let's get what because they still have to jump from 1.9 to 2.1 and be the culprit, being the department that has to be on the ball in rolling out the infrastructure. And we know that it's been in our observations and assessment when we visited Prestige, that department was a culprit in meeting its obligations to the departments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members. I'm going to put honourable Greasy on first because she has to leave at 11:45. She's been put on an earlier flight back to Lower Ham. But there's a logistical challenge. Can we see, please, you can start with your reply, then please stay, and we'll come to Trisha.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you very much to the honourable members for the questions. I'm going to start with the issue of the Department of Health. I think that we have already agreed before this committee that in the 16-17 financial year, the control environment in the Department of Health and Accounting was suboptimal. And what do I mean when I say that? That it is exactly this issue that the honourable member is pointing to, is a situation where 2,500 staff get absorbed into the system and there are not funded posts for those staff to go into. Now, let's suppose that all other things were equal, which we already know they were not. If for some unforeseen reason you have to absorb people, then you have to make the appropriate budget adjustments in the adjustment process, did not happen. And this is what led to the burgeoning of the accruals, and it is the matter that the Executive Subcommittee on Health is trying to manage today. I think it's important to share with honourable members that we have already appointed a permanent CFO for health. We have also made a recommendation to the Premier on the head of the department, and I'm hoping that Premier will be making an announcement on his views on that recommendation in the near future. Because we agree with you, Chair, that stabilising the senior management of a big department like health is absolutely crucial if you want to get the whole system under control. And we have been operating with an intervention team that has been seconded by the National Minister. Very good and competent team, but that is not the same as having people who will take ultimate responsibility. In terms of the issue of overspending on medical supplies, one of the things we worked on with the MC is that each hospital must have a cost centre for medical supplies. They must understand what their budget is. And it's up to the hospital management to monitor budget against spending. We've stopped this thing where medical supplies can get purchased on a purchase order on a three-quarter quote system. Because we are also concerned about the issue you were raising of what's going on in the medical supply depot and that medical supplies should not expire. So what we're saying is that the head of a hospital has a budget. He's got to monitor, or she must monitor, what is being spent according to that budget and must restrain the spending on medical supplies. So I think that is working much better. Last year, we had lots of battles, but I think in the current financial year, it is starting to work a lot better. And it's the only way. Hospitals have to understand this is the budget. When the budget is finished, it's finished. So manage it properly.
Yes.
And you can't have a situation where a particular medical specialist decides they only like product A as opposed to product B, which is in the storeroom. So these are the kinds of things which we're saying hospital superintendents and other senior managers must manage appropriately. I would share the committee's concern about the contingent liability that the department is facing. I would also say to the committee that part of what we're working on is the validity to the claims that are being brought. Because if you don't have adequate controls, then anybody can claim anything and there are no records one way or the other. So I think that that is the whole purpose of auditing all of these claims, making sure they're all defended, getting the files, the records, etc., etc. It's a huge job, but that is what we are seized with at the moment. And as I said, you can already see, because we've put the brakes on, I'm sure these happy-go-lucky claimants will probably go to the Free State or somewhere else where the brakes have not been put on, because we do know that they tend to tour to find places where controls are a little bit inadequate. I think that we are also concerned about the historical irregular spending in health, and I think that is exactly what the open tender system is intended to deal with, and we are busy at the moment with health transversal contracts. So I think that would also help us in terms of once we appoint those contracts in terms of dealing with some of the high levels of irregular expenditure in the past. Let me deal with the issues that colleagues are raising around human settlement. And I think that one would not want to defend underperformance on housing units. But I think that there are a couple of issues that I would like the committee to take note of. And I would also ask you, Chairperson, whether you could perhaps help us in this regard. Up until a week ago, the current plan for human settlement for the current financial year had not been approved by the National Department. So what that means is that our department cannot spend in the first quarter. Now, anyone who's ever run a race knows, if you don't move off the starting line, you cannot win the race. And the same thing has happened every single year that I have been MC of Finance, that human settlements wait until the end of the first quarter, national human settlements, to approve the plan. Now, I think it would be very important that the honourable committee members investigate that for us and put a little bit of pressure to say that this can't happen, because this is part of, if your plan is only approved in the first quarter, you begin procurement in the second quarter, you begin to construct in the third quarter, by the fourth quarter you will hit the March spike, because what you've got is projects that are underway, and so you transfer to the national entity so that the national entity can complete those projects which are underway and pay those contractors. So I don't think it's the way that one is supposed to work, but we need some help here. And I think that this would be very important. The other thing I would want to say to you is that your committee would know the amount of the urban settlement grants that the Metro returned to National Treasury. Now that urban settlement grant is for bulk. You can't build houses if there's no bulk, because you can't expect people to live in the houses and turn on taps that have no water and flush toilets that have no sanitation. So there is, these things are linked. When that massive amount of money, and it was over R1 billion, was returned to National Treasury, it has consequences, and these are the consequences that one would see. Just let me clarify the point on the IDMS for the honourable member. What I was saying is the IDMS has helped DRD to improve its implementation for health and education. Obviously, the DRD does not build houses. Human settlements build the houses themselves. They are also using an IDMS process, but I have explained the externalities that are impacting on the spending of the human settlements grant. I think on the grant that the honourable member was referring to, the education special conditional grant for severely disabled children, parking spent 90% of that grant in the first year. Of course, we would like it to be 98%, because that's kind of our target with these things, but I think 90% is not bad in the first year. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable members, we will consider our report on the provincial treasuries early in August, I think it's the first week. On that day, it's the only item on the program that we call the Department of Human Settlements National. Mm-hmm. This thing came up in not only Gauteng, it came up in other provinces as well, that we get the clarity and assist Gauteng. In any case, the NCOP is taking parliament to the people in Gauteng before we adjourn December. So the NCOP will also go to Gauteng. Also to congratulate Gauteng on their progress on the open tender. I think there's something that other provinces can learn from Gauteng, looking at slide 33. Initially, we're going to release you. I know you were... You've got to run, and we want you to go home safely. Thank you very much for honoring this meeting and your presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the members.
Thank you. Restate.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think not only were the questions, but also there were input in terms of what we need to look at. And maybe we also, maybe speaking for my province on this issue of this new grant, we tend to accept flimsy excuses from officials. You know, one of the biggest problems in the province in terms of spending this new grant was the availability of the skills that has to procure. But these are the people who sat down and made the same plan. So I think I agree with one of you that we need to be a little bit more strict in terms of taking accountability on this issue of new ground. And I also remember that the Honourable Member was speaking that even the Netherlands Science Grant took time to take off. So it is clear that continue with these tendencies where people want to see money in their budget, but they don't have true actionable plans to ensure that they're spending. So I really want to say on our part, we're taking the input and then we will be working hard to make sure that these agreements, because normally it's agreements, business plans between National Department and the Provincial Department. These plans, in most cases, goes without being properly checked by the executive authorities, and I think this is what needs to be able to happen. The second issue, Chairperson, I want to comment on is the issue of compensation. I like what you said quite early, in that we need to have this discussion about education. And this discussion should not only be restricted to the portfolio committee or whoever deals only with education. The budget must be part of this process. I'll tell you why. One of the national embarrassments is the issue, the report that was released by PEVAS, which shows that the majority of grade 4 levels in quintile 1 to 3 schools, and poor schools, can't read and write in grade 4. And one of the issues I always raise is the issue of learner-teacher ratio, especially at ECD level, grade R, 1, 2, 3. The teacher-learner ratio there, because when we do teacher-learner ratio, we just aggregate the whole province and divide by the number of teachers. But you need more teachers at that foundation phase level, so as they can actually support learners. So I think that if one has got a chance, you want to, you know, sponsor an idea that says disaggregate the mathematical ratio between primary schools and high schools. Our system is upside down at the moment. You find a grade 12 class of, say, 20 kids or something like that, but a grade R class of 40 kids, 50 kids. And therefore, the foundation that is being laid is not strong enough to sustain these kids up to where they're supposed to go. And this is one area that we need to look at. Unfortunately, it's going to reduce, it's going to demand that in the short term, there must be budget increment in such a way that we, whether within the departments, I mean within the provinces, but it will be, it will take you time to be able to turn around the situation. The question that was asked in terms of the province, that compensation, why it declined, we tried to reduce as many non-core functions as possible, but obviously, teaching is a labor-intensive job. There must be a teacher in front of those kids. And therefore, you know, even though you try to reduce as much as possible, you continue to overspend because you know, you need this kind of teachers to be with them. So there's been a balancing act, growth in one area, reduction in one area. But at the end, you still have the problem. But I noticed that National Treasury also raised the issue that was also raised by the provincial treasury, that the issue of budgeting for health, for education has been a concern. And that's why I said earlier that we took decisions that include taking banners, giving the youth budget. I think HOD will help me. We are talking about 400 million, between 300 and 400 million rand that is being spent on the other program. So it's a program that once we think we get our priorities right, we need to review. Already the executive council has agreed that we need to review, given that the president last year agreed that, or government has agreed that children from the working class now can actually move into university and be given NSF. So that will give us space now that most of our poor kids now can go to university, deserve to go there. And then we can be able to release incrementally this money. The second issue is that you would have heard that universities in South Africa have agreed that they want to increase the intake in the medical field, because we are asking ourselves, how do you propagate the policy of National Health Insurance, NHI, and not have enough doctors, right? So these are the things that policy conflicting and policy that could not be implementable because of the sufficient number of schemes. Last year, on the issue of throughput rate, I'm not disputing what you're saying, I accept it, but I just want to say that you must remember that in terms of the South African Schools Act, that the compulsory phase of education is up to grade 9. And this one area has been raised. Why do you talk about this thing when the compulsory phase means from grade 10, children can go to FET colleges. And we have been encouraging people to go to FET colleges. So I think the calculation will take us back to where we say technical education is not important, artisans are not important, what is important is academic performance at that level, and so on. So I'm just saying that we need to manage that process correctly, because we can send a wrong signal as members of the parliament and members of the legislature.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. MEC has responded to quite a number of questions and comments. On the Tabantro Clinic, no comments on that, but I know that at least this time around, the Department of Health is now redirecting its funds towards maintenance and rehabilitation of existing facilities, and we are also focusing on this program of the committee an ideal clinic. We are focusing on ideal clinics, and we will just follow up on the Tabatu one. I will not comment as to whether or not the work has started, but that's one thing we will definitely give attention to when we come back home. And the issue of medicine, of the medicine that was not accounted for in one of the stores, I believe that should have been in one of the facilities, but we have now put into place controls, especially on our warehouse. We are able to account for the material that is on our warehouse. The problem of medicine that would have expired before it is utilized has been a huge problem previously, and we have attended to that problem when we took the department into under administration, where we ensured that there must be optimum stock levels at our stores, and that before we accept medication, we must also look into the expiry dates of such medication. If the medication is about to expire, we should not accept such medication from the pharmaceuticals. We've also engaged pharmaceuticals to that effect, and we agreed in principle on how we should work together. And there was a comment on public works linked to irregular expenditure. I just want to bring it to the attention of all of the listeners that in fact the public works problem, it's not necessarily irregular expenditure, it's actually accruals. It's non-payment of property rates and taxes, and the services to the municipality is not irregular expenditure. I think that's one of the things that we need to clarification. And I believe then we would have attended to all the questions that were raised by our members.
You mentioned twice in your presentation, also referring to human settlements, we are concerned. The we, I think, is the National Treasury. If you say we are concerned, what are you doing about being concerned? What is the action plan? And that is the approach of this committee, as well as in appropriations. We want action plans to do better. So if you can answer that, there were other questions also, maybe refer to you. I'm going to give you 10 minutes to do your remark.
Okay, I'll start, I think, Felika will add. Maybe starting with the issue of human settlements, which we have been picking up over a number of times. Because at first what we did, after picking up these issues, we went in our case to again to actually engage the provincial treasurer on what the issues are in respect of the transfers that are happening at the end of the financial year. And then what we, with the sense that we got, because the treasury themselves did not even want to give that money even from their side. But then when we engaged, we heard that there was a letter from the National Department of Human Settlements that said you must release that money. And then whoever then needs to engage, then should engage with the National Department of Human Settlements. And currently those discussions are happening with our DDG, Marjorie Malene, with the National Department of Human Settlements. Because we have started, like I was saying, that we will be writing letters to all provinces in particular to actually one tell us those amounts that were transferred to entities and municipalities, what percentage of that is actually spent on network service delivery. And that which is not spent is that money that we want to subject to the removal process so that they still come and then produce proof of commitment, failure to do so. That money should be referred back to the National Revenue Fund. And in addition to that, because normally when Department of Human Settlements report expenditure on the Human Settlement Development Grant, they normally prepare a report that has a transfer to households, because they then say they build a house and they transfer it to households. Which is the argument that we have to say until such time that it's transferred, and until such time there is a title deed that is actually issued to the beneficiary, that house remains the property of the national, the provincial Department of Human Settlements. And that money should then be reported as payments for capital assets. And it's in that case that when that happens, that money will then not be hidden under transfers. So they will fully account for that money under that line, which is then payments for capital assets. And I think we take note on the planning process that we actually have to go through, just to make sure that when new conditional grants are created, there are proper plans that are given by the national departments in terms of what should happen and how that will be monitored and so forth. So we take note of that, so that when we then plan or introduce new conditional grants, all the necessary processes and the due diligence should have been done to make sure that when such a grant is introduced, it's not going to actually be understood.
Up to 6 o'clock, 18 hours the afternoon.
If we complete our meeting before 6, fantastic. But we're going to do a thorough job. Receiving a full presentation from the National Treasury on the fiscal position as we have done this morning on that province, as well as presentations from the national and provincial Auditor General, as well as the Ministry for Finance, Honourable Wendy Nelson, from the Northwest Provincial Treasury, the NEC. That will be part one of the agenda. Part two will be the newly elected Premier, Professor Mahoro, that will address us and then give the perspective of the Northwest in terms of the intervention. That will take us through to the end. And that, honourable members, bring us to the end of this meeting. The meeting is closed, the meeting is adjourned. And if you travel, travel safely. And the honourable member is studying, doing a good job. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you also to the staff.